If Only It Were Chadwick by Louis Buss. The scrutiny of the handwritten inscriptions found in a 1934 edition of the book Self-Realization, bought on eBay, takes the author on a journey of inspiration and expectation. He concludes this narrative at the Sri Ramanashram Archive Building, where the archivist gives his final pronouncement on the book, continued from the July-August issue. Conjurings for Our Salvation, Part 7. When the tour of the ashram archive was over, I produced my own mysterious little book and handed it over to Sri Ramani. He accepted it with a sort of professional reverence, like a man well used to handling ancient artifacts which might at any moment crumble into dust. Having looked at the opening inscription, he led the way back to his office, where he opened the book on his desk and bent down to pore over it. "This looks like Chadwick." My heart leapt, but not daring to hope, I immediately blurted out all the evidence against it being Chadwick. The fact that he had never mentioned parents, but only his sisters, and the fact that the mystery devotee had made that howler about Seshadri. Sri Ramani shook his head, apparently not in the least impressed, and left the room. A couple of minutes later, he returned with scans of a diary written in Chadwick's own hand, and the process of comparison began. A young archive helper, who had been sitting at another desk, soon found himself drawn in, so that there were five of us standing around peering down, pointing out similarities between R's, Y's and T's. There was a certain moment when my sister spotted an M in the diary, which was so perfectly the same as one in the book that only an expert forger could have pulled it off. We already knew that there had only been a tiny number of Westerners in the ashram when those inscriptions were written. The more we compared, the more absurd it seemed to imagine that one of those few had had writing so uncannily close to Chadwick's. After some 10 minutes of this, Sri Ramani made his final pronouncement. "This is Chadwick's handwriting." That set the seal on it for me. If the evidence of my own eyes hadn't been enough, I should never dare to doubt the man Bhagavan has put in charge of his archives. From that moment on, it was official. This second edition of Self-Realization had been sent home to England in 1936 by Major Chadwick. Already, it was starting to seem strange and slightly absurd to me that I could ever have believed it might be anyone else. Who could it really have been but good old Chadwick? I should have known from the start that the dear chap wouldn't let me down. I remain at a loss to explain the little anomalies that threw us off the scent. The fact that Chadwick makes no mention of his parents and Russell elsewhere could, I suppose, be explained by all sorts of family circumstances that we shall never know. The Seshadri howler is more difficult to fathom, especially as Bhagavan had specifically commanded Chadwick to read the book. Perhaps he decided to send a copy home before reading it himself. Perhaps he had read it and knew full well that Seshadri had been dead for years, but just somehow got in a muddle when he came to write that particular caption, confusing him with some other Swami who really was living in a cave on the hill. Or perhaps, just for a bit of fun, Bhagavan himself gave Chadwick's writing arm a jog at that moment, wishing to add a bit of extra spice to the mystery that would absorb us 75 years later. Before we left the archive, there was one last question in my mind that needed to be settled, and it was that of the book's final resting place. While we were all poring over it, I had told Sri Ramani that I was of course ready to present it to the archive if he thought it interesting enough. He had not seemed to hear me at the time, but now, having made his final pronouncement on the handwriting, he said, "An inscribed book like this is really of little value to us, and we have plenty of copies of this edition. So you take it home and keep it in your library." And there it now stands beneath the big colored picture of Bhagavan with his legs crossed, the old warrior at the end of its campaign, staring triumphantly across the room from its Perspex podium. Twice it has made the journey from India to England, but I doubt it will be doing so again. As Chadwick intended when he first sealed it in its packet, England was its final destination. Whether or not his little inscriptions had the desired effect on his parents and Russell, they have had a great effect on me. Just as he intended, they paint a vivid picture of the life he lived in the ashram, all the more poignant now for being so far away, not only in space, but also in time. Now I find that the few phrases he wrote by those photographs keep coming back to me, haunting me like fragments of some half-remembered poem. Meditation at the shrine of Krishna. I walk along here each evening. This is a room where the Maharishi sits. I sit here too. What a blessed life dear old Chadwick led, a charmed life in every way. Chadwick was with us before. He was one of us. He had some desire to be reborn in the West, and that he has now fulfilled. No wonder he had worked out self-inquiry before even hearing of Bhagwan. It seems that through effort and devotion in previous lives, Chadwick had fully earned the various privileges he enjoyed in the ashram. But he also blazed a trail for all we less illustrious foreigners who can't cross our legs or eat from a leaf. Thanks to Chadwick, all of us will feel welcome whenever we pass beneath that magic archway. The great soul in whose presence I sit. Looking up at the book standing beneath the picture, it is impossible not to feel that he is sitting there again, the loyal disciple symbolically reunited with his master. I hope the book will always stay there now, as if sunk in meditation at Bhagavan's feet, as he stares out into the room with that unworldly look in his eyes. I feel enormously privileged to have that unique volume in my home and to be able to look at it each day. All I can promise in return is that I will do my best to obey Chadwick's heartfelt plea. This book is very precious. Please keep it carefully. As for his presence here, proving some sort of mysterious link between myself and Chadwick, I know I can't really claim such a thing, much as I would love to. But on my first visit to Arunachala a couple of years ago, I was lucky enough to be shown around Chadwick's cottage by Dennis Hattel, who was staying there at the time. Of course, since this was where my Chadwick had lived, I felt absurdly proud to find how close it was to the old hall, closer, I think, than any other dwelling from those days when most devotees had to go and live outside the ashram in Parakottur. I was intrigued to see the photograph Dennis had put up of Bhagavan attending the opening ceremony of the cottage, and touched by the little stone at the side of the building where, in a typically boyish yet earnest gesture, Chadwick had sought to bury his ego. So, I have seen the room where, if we believe his version of the dates and not Annamalai Swami's, Chadwick was living at the time he sent the book home to his parents. This is also the room where Bhagavan would sometimes stop by for a chat on his way for a walk in Parakottur, the room where he would make himself at home and start going through the contents of Chadwick's wallet. Is it too fanciful to imagine that he might have dropped in at the very moment Chadwick was writing those inscriptions? As usual, Chadwick would have remained seated and carried on with his work. Bhagavan might have asked what he was up to, and he would have explained that he was sending a book home to his parents in the hope that it would help them understand his move to India, and that they might even derive some spiritual benefit from it themselves. Then he might have said, "Bhagavan, would you bless it for me?" Such requests were by no means uncommon, and as far as I know, Bhagavan never refused them. He would take the proffered object in his hands and stare intently at it, often for minutes on hand, subjecting it to a concentrated blast of his mysterious radiation. Given Chadwick's enormous faith in Bhagavan, and given his clear desire to communicate something of this to his family back in England, it doesn't seem at all implausible that he might have asked Bhagavan to bless the book in person before he sent it on its way. Who knows for how many years afterwards it might hold that radioactive charge, and what unknown benefits it might have scattered on the assortment of people who handled it. Chadwick's family, various unknown book dealers and collectors, and ultimately me. Perhaps if Bhagavan hadn't given it that initial burst of power, it would never have survived all its adventures to arrive, tattered and would be gone, but marvelously intact, back at his holy feet. Has this book of mine really been touched by Ramana Maharishi? Only Bhagavan himself will ever know. But as he stares down at me now, that expression of his seems somehow more enigmatic than ever, more knowing, more gentle and benign. I suppose that I shall once again have to admit defeat and call it a smile. Writing in Tamil verse, the mighty Muruganar may have found some satisfactory way of describing it. Sadly, I shall never be able to judge, but I don't think it will be done in English until Shakespeare himself returns to this island and takes up his pen once more. As I search for the words with which to end this account, I find myself reminded of Chadwick's own last words, and I am suddenly struck by a symmetry in his life. I am sure Chadwick wouldn't mind my saying that the day of his real birth was the day he first blundered eagerly into the hall of the Maharishi and sat down by the famous sofa on that slightly offensive chair. Whatever life he had had till then must soon have come to seem shadowy and faint, as all our former lives do once Bhagavan has exposed us to his radiance. Whenever his body might have been born, that was the day when the real Chadwick, our own dear Chadwick, first appeared. And if that was the day of his birth, then the first words he ever spoke in his life were to ask Bhagavan that question about why Christ cried out on the cross. Years later, as he lay suffering his own mortal agony, Chadwick, like Christ before him, seems to have felt momentarily abandoned by his God. He was in the Christian Mission Hospital in Vellore, and though delirious, could still recognize people around him. When asked if he could feel Bhagavan's presence, he said yes. But when asked if Bhagavan was helping him, he replied just as clearly, no. Was that Chadwick's moment of final despair? Did he feel, as the crucified Christ seems to have done, that God was still there, but had momentarily forsaken him? What he went on to say just before the end implies that the crucifixion may very well have been in his mind. Perhaps on some deep level, he may even have been back in the old hall on that first day, once more asking Bhagavan that momentous first question and listening to his reply. For now, he said, it's Easter. When reminded that Easter had not yet come, he spoke with a beaming expression what turned out to be his final words. They are surely a confirmation that in the end, Chadwick's adored guru did not let him down. I know it's still 5 days away, but it is my Easter. Bhagavan died near Easter too, having been born so close to Christmas. Anyone who thinks this a coincidence has perhaps failed to understand the profound religious and mythical significance of spring equinox and winter solstice. Given what he was, Bhagavan simply couldn't have been born and died at any time any more than Christ could. If a star appeared to mark his death in 1950, just as one had appeared to mark his birth 2,000 years before, we needn't be surprised by the symmetry. For Jesus Christ and Ramana Maharishi were merely conjured forms assumed for our salvation by the enchanter of the isle.